Welcome to the Beetlebugs Podcast. Yay! As people follow clues and take off both their shoes and walk on back to 69. Every road dreams sell the life. The sergeant on the pink dark side. The piper travels through the sky. I'll hear and I am here. Every road.
Hello. Welcome to our latest episode of the Beetlebugs Podcast, a podcast about the Beatles. I'm Aisha.
And I'm Jesse. And we are now 11 episodes into season one of this podcast series.
That's amazing. I've really enjoyed looking through the history of the Beatles. I've learned so much.
Yeah, so have I. And we've still got lots more to go through. But first, it's news time.
This is breaking news from the BBC, the Beetlebugs Corporation. Famed Beatles manager Brian Epstein will be the subject of a new biopic, according to Variety magazine. Director Jonas Åkerlund is set to bring the story of the man often referred to as the fifth Beatle to the big screen. Åkerlund has directed numerous music videos and concert films for a range of artists, including Metallica, Ozzy Osbourne, The Rolling Stones, and U2.
Brian Epstein's story has everything I'm looking for in a story. It's all about Brian's singularity for me,
Åkerlund said in a statement to Variety.
I love that Brian seemed to know every step of the way what no one else knew. He saw things that no one else saw. His vision was astonishing. He created a culture that didn't exist. The film is more like touring Brian's mind and what it was like to be him than how one thing led to another chronologically. I want to bring him back to life.
Epstein became the Fab Four's manager after they signed a contract with him in 1962 and remained their manager until his death in 1967. Midas Man will be shot in London, Liverpool and the US and is slated for release in 2021. And that's all from this edition of Breaking News from the BBC, the Beetlebugs Corporation.
On with the podcast.
In last week's episode, we talked about the release of the band's groundbreaking album, Revolver. After the critical success of the album, as well as the band's retirement from touring, the Beatles were about to enter a period that would cement their place in music history. 1966 was a rollercoaster ride for the Beatles. They had great success with the album Revolver, but also had to deal with controversies in the Philippines and America. After their decision to stop touring, the band were now ready to focus their time in the studio for the next album. They were about to produce a masterpiece.
After the band had returned from their final tour, rumours were afoot that the Beatles were about to split. The punishing schedule of tours and promotions were beginning to take their toll on the band. George Harrison had to be persuaded to stay after he told Brian Epstein of his desire to leave the band. The band were now given assurances that their touring days were well and truly over. The band went on a three-month break to pursue their own interests.
When they returned, they set about starting work on their eighth studio album. With their touring days now over, the Beatles were now ready to take their studio's work to the next level. Producer George Martin and sound engineer George Emmerich would play key roles in bringing Abbey Road Studios to life. and Lennon and McCartney were now at the peak of their powers, with both songwriters pushing one another to great heights.
Between November 1966 and April 1967, the Beatles spent an unprecedented 700 hours of recording time to produce their new album. A far cry from their first album, which took just 12 hours to record. With their touring days behind them, the band no longer had to worry about creating songs that needed to be played live. They could focus all their creative energies producing the work that they wanted. George Harrison, touching on the band's musical progression, said in an interview in 1967, "We can do things that please us without conforming to the standard pop idea. We are not only involved in pop music, but all music."
Paul McCartney played a pivotal role in the creation of the album. While the Beatles were on a three-month break, McCartney joined forces with George Martin to work on the soundtrack to the film The Family Way. The experience didn't really do anything to re-energize McCartney. What did change things for him was a road trip to France and beyond. Paul McCartney travelled to Paris to get away from the busy London lifestyle. He came up with an idea of disguising himself so that he could walk the streets of Paris unnoticed. He got himself a false moustache, a long coat and slicked back his hair. And it worked! He could walk the streets of Paris without anybody hassling him. Although it was probably because he just looked really creepy.
But the question around identity and anonymity stayed with McCartney. What if the Beatles could shed their identities? How liberating would that be, he thought. McCartney would arguably become the band's dominant creative force during the production of the new album. On a flight back from Africa, he had an idea for a song. Indeed, a concept. McCartney imagined an Edwardian-era military band, dressed in psychedelic colours, performing songs and music that pushed every conceivable musical boundary. But this band wouldn't be the Beatles. This band would become an alter ego of the Beatles. McCartney explained, "I thought, let's not be ourselves. Let's develop alter egos, so we don't have to project an image that we know. It would be much more free. What would really be interesting would be to actually take on the personas of this different band. We could say, how would somebody else sing this? He might approach it a bit more sarcastically, perhaps. So I had this idea of giving the Beatles alter egos, simply to get a different approach." Freed of the limitations of their Beatles personas, the band were ready to unleash the full power of their creativity.
Now, the new group dreamed up by Paul would need a name. McCartney said,
"It was the start of the hippie times, and there was a jingly jangly hippie aura all around in America. I started thinking about what would be a really mad name to call a band. At the time, there were lots of groups with names like Laughing Joe and his Medicine Band, or Colonel Tucker's Medicinal Brew and Compound, all that old Western going round on wagon stuff. With long, rambling names."
While on a flight with Beatles roadie Mal Evans, the in-flight meal would provide the spark of inspiration that would lead to the naming of the new band. After getting a bit confused by the packets marked S and P with his meal, McCartney reminded him they were salt and pepper. Then he joked, "Sergeant Pepper." Soon after, the name Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was born.
Armed with a concept and a new persona for the band, McCartney went into creative overdrive. John Lennon, not to be outdone, stepped up to the creative challenge put down by his songwriting partner.
The Beatles were now locked away in their Abbey Road studios working on their new album. EMI had given the band an unlimited budget to work with. Some of the techniques the band used in their previous album, Revolver, would be developed and built upon. They were determined to break new ground.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields.
first songs to be recorded for the new album were Strawberry Fields Forever and Penny Lane.
It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields.
However, EMI soon put the pressure on George Martin and the band for the two songs to be used as a double A-side single, meaning that these two songs, which would go down as two of the band's most celebrated songs, would not feature on the album. George Martin and the band relented. A decision that tormented Martin in later years, "The biggest mistake of my professional career," he said.
Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane would set the tone for the forthcoming album. It was classic Lennon and McCartney. Both songs evoked memories of childhood set to familiar locations and more innocent times. Strawberry Fields Forever is based on the playing ground of Strawberry Field, a Salvation Army children's home in Liverpool, while Penny Lane is McCartney's reminiscence of places that he, Lennon and Harrison would frequent to and from school. Strawberry Fields not only drew on nostalgia, but also touched on deeper questions, on life and existence itself. Lennon, a sort of Pied Piper, invites listeners to follow him, to trust him as the spiritual guide for this journey with the song's opening line, "Let me take you down." While the line, "Nothing is real," hints at Eastern mysticism and philosophy, the world being nothing more than an illusion. The song included Indian instruments, flutes, Western classical instruments, as well as a vast array of experimental studio techniques, which added to the song's psychedelic ambience. Lennon described the song as his finest ever work with the Beatles. In response, McCartney wrote the equally nostalgic Penny Lane.
Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know, and all the people that come and go stop and say hello. On the corner is a banker with a motor car, the little children laughing at him.
Lennon, McCartney and Harrison would take regular bus journeys through Penny Lane. Lennon even referenced Penny Lane in the previous hit, In My Life. McCartney, typically more upbeat, manages to blend the nostalgic with the sense of optimism evident in Britain in the late 60s. England had just won the World Cup. The counter-culture revolution was underway and young people now had their soundtrack to the coming summer of love. McCartney's genius was to cloak his messages of the surreal with instantly catchy melodies. The song seemingly tells of a perfect summer day beneath the blue suburban skies. But at the same time it's raining, the fireman rushes in from the pouring rain, all the while invoking a November winter's day with the line, "Selling poppies from a tray."
The single reached number 2 in the charts, and the standards set by the band were so high that the press began to write that the Beatles' crazy success was now coming to an end. Paul McCartney had other ideas. He said,
"Music papers started to slag us off because Sgt. Pepper's took 5 months to record. And I remember the great glee seeing in one of the papers how the Beatles have dried up and I was sitting there rubbing my hands, saying, "You just wait."
On the 26th of May, 1967, the wait was over. The Beatles released their new album called Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
The world now had its soundtrack to the Summer of Love, with the Beatles becoming the unofficial spokesman of the counterculture revolution. Writing in Rolling Stone magazine, Langdon Winner said, "The closest Western civilization has come to unity since the Congress of Vienna in 1815 was the week the Sgt. Pepper album was released. In every city in Europe and America, the radio stations played it, and everyone listened. It was the most amazing thing I've ever heard. For a brief moment, the irreparable, fragmented consciousness of the West was unified, at least in the minds of the young."
The acclaim was rich and it was universal. Time magazine wrote,
"Rich and secure enough to go on repeating themselves, or to do nothing at all, they have exercised compulsion for growth, change and experimentation. Messengers from beyond rock and roll, they are creating the most original, expressive, and musically interesting sounds being heard in pop music. They are leading an evolution in which the best of current post-rock sounds are becoming something that pop music has never been before. An art form. Serious musicians are listening to them and marking their work as a historic departure in the progress of music. Any music."
It's track listing time. The album contained 13 songs, 7 songs on side 1 and 6 on side 2. The songs on side 1 were Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, With a Little Help from My Friends, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, Getting Better, Fixing a Hole, She's Leaving Home, Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite. And on side 2, Within You Without You, When I'm 64, Lovely Rita, Good Morning, Good Morning, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Reprise, and A Day in the Life. This is such a great album. It's one of my all-time favourites.
Well, it is one of their best albums ever. So, which ones are your favourites?
That's a tough one. There are quite a few. Well, I love the title track, Sgt. Pepper's. It's got a very unusual sound to it. Lots of different instruments and brass bands. I love it. And then there's Lucy in the Sky, When I'm 64, and here's a great one to sing along to. Would you believe in a love at first sight? Yes, I'm certain that it happens all the time. What do you see when you turn out the light? I can tell you, but I know it's mine. Ooh, I get by with a little help from my friends. Get high with a little help from my friends. Ooh, I'm gonna try with a little help from my friends.
Do you need anybody? I just need someone.
Two songs on the album are two songs that didn't even end up on the album, Strawberry Fields Forever and Penny Lane. Can you imagine that album with those two songs in it? How could they leave it off the album? No gold stars for anyone at EMI. In fact, go stand in the corner.
Yeah, definitely detention for everyone at EMI. Okay, so how did the album do, Aisha?
Well, as you can imagine, the album was both a commercial and critical success. The album topped the charts in the UK for 23 weeks and for 15 weeks in the USA. The critical reception for the album was even bigger. American radio station interrupted their regular programs to play the whole album. The Times described the album as a masterclass. Newsweek magazine described the album was a masterpiece and likened the lyrics with works of Harold Pinter and T.S. Eliot. The New Yorker magazine said that the album had now put the Beatles in that special territory where entertainment slips into art. And the acclaim for the album continues to this day. In 2003, Rolling Stone magazine put Sgt. Pepper's at number one in its top 500 great albums of all time.
The album had truly changed the way music was being viewed and consumed by the wider public. Even the album cover itself had become a space for the band to explore its creativity and break new ground. The album cover is a collage, featuring an array of the great and the famous, with the band wearing their bright, psychedelic, Edwardian-style military dress. Each band member had to come up with a list of people they wanted on the cover. John Lennon had asked for Hitler and Jesus to be included on the cover. The controversies of 1966 still fresh in their memories, EMI rather unsurprisingly vetoed the idea immediately. The album was also the first to have the lyrics of the songs printed in the packaging.
It's time for a fun fact. Did you know that Elvis Presley was supposed to feature on the album cover as well? I mean, it makes sense. After all, he is the king of rock and roll. And he was a childhood hero and major influence on the Beatles. But the band decided later that they couldn't have the king as a cutout next to other celebrities. McCartney said later, "Elvis was too important and too far above the rest even to mention. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why Elvis Aaron Presley was and still is today the king of rock and roll."
And on that hip gyrating note, we come to the end of another episode in the story of the Beatles.
Join us again next week as we continue our magical mystery tour, charting the rise and rise of the greatest rock and roll band in history ever. If you do like our show, then please, please, pretty please subscribe to our show. You can find us on iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other podcast platforms. Stay safe and see you again next time. Bye!